Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often because it frequently leads people to have comments, questions, or testimonials of their own. And if you have any of those, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and I'll announce you by your area code. This year we are doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons, and we are on the 349th day of the year. And lesson 349 of the workbook reads, Today, I let Christ's vision look upon all things for me and judge them not, but give each one a miracle of love instead. The commentary reads, So would I liberate all things I see and give to them the freedom that I seek. For thus do I obey the law of love and give what I would find and make my own. It will be given me because I have chosen it as the gift I want to give. The Creator, your gifts are mine. Each one that I accept gives me a miracle to give away. And giving as I would receive, I learn your healing miracles belong to me. Our Creator knows our needs. He gives us grace to meet them all. And so we trust in the creation to send miracles to bless the world and heal our minds as we return to the source of creation. Pam Grout in her Course in Miracles experiment book, lesson 349 is titled, Et tu, Grover? She quotes Ashton Kutcher, although I'll never know why, as saying, we are all just standing on piles of collective fiction. Pam writes, I take my inspiration wherever I can get it. And Grover, yes, the Muppet Grover, taught me everything I need to know about fear. In the book, the monster at the end of this book, the lovable Muppet warns his readers that whatever they do, they should not turn the next page. Because, gulp, there's a monster at the end of the book. As the reader bravely continues to flip through the pages, Grover gets more and more freaked out. Stop, he warns. You've turned the page. You must stop turning the pages. In his desperation, Grover, who claims to be so scared of monsters, attempts to nail the pages shut. He tries to tie the pages down. He even builds a big brick wall. But despite Grover's attempts to avoid this long-feared serial killer, the reader keeps turning pages, getting ever closer to the monster and the chilling conclusion at the end of the book. Finally, when the reader reaches the last page, he discovers that the evil monster is none other than the furry, blue Grover himself, harmless and nothing like he feared. As Grover learns to embrace the monster within, he realizes that Franklin D. Roosevelt was right. Fear is self-generated, overblown, and never worth our energy. So, that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And as usual, we have got about 50 minutes to discuss any topic that would please you and or answer your questions or help you step through a worksheet process or explain the worksheet or any of the other tools available on whyagain.org. So give us a call, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1 and we can have a conversation. What would serve you today? What's on your mind? We had our support group last night and we were discussing a variety of things for the first hour. And then the next hour, we listened to an introduction and the beginning of Alan Cohen's book and a course that he's put together on his book, A Course in Miracles Made Easy. And A Course in Miracles basically boils down to, Can we learn to choose love over fear? It's a pretty tall order when we're raised in a culture that basically honors fear, promotes it, teaches it, teaches us to listen to it, generates it with division and competition and labeling and... So what is the mechanism, what is the process for somebody who wants to break free from that conditioning? How can we learn to choose love over fear when we're raised in a culture that basically highly reveres fear? And teaches us to respect fear and listen to fear and be driven by fear. And that's our challenge. That's what the essence of the Course in Miracles workbook lessons is for the year. I remember we did an interview with Corinne Zupko, who wrote the book From Anxiety to Love. And she was talking about in that book how, as a very young child, she was given clinical diagnoses as having anxiety disorders. And it was just a lifelong pattern for her of being driven by fear. And finally, in her college years, she collapsed under the weight of the anxiety and had a full-blown panic attack at 3 in the morning and was just completely unable to function, and called her mother, and her mother had been for years trying to get her to take a look at this spiritual book, and I put the word spiritual in quotes, The Course in Miracles. And her mother said to her, okay, so you're on the floor in the bathroom at 3 in the morning crying and shaking and calling me. Will you now please take a look at The Course in Miracles? Will you let me help you see what this book has to offer? And finally, Corinne agreed to it, and that led to her reading the book many times over and applying it in various ways, adding it to her schooling and training in psychology, and putting together an actual system for using the Course in Miracles format and its teachings to help people move out of anxiety, move into a more loving space, learning to develop their own internal connection and listen to what she calls the inner therapist, which is what the Course in Miracles would call the Holy Spirit, what some texts call the Great Comforter. But the idea, which is so foreign to most of us in the world today, of choosing love over fear, refusing to listen to fear as it wants to tell us what to do, it's anathema. It is scary for people who have been so thoroughly conditioned to believe that fear is their guide and fear is there to help them and protect them. And it reminds me of, I know I read this not too very long ago, but it reminds me of, and since it's the Course in Miracles experiment commentary and it's part of the lessons, it reminds me of a lesson from Lesson 7 in The Way of Mastery. And in Lesson 7, Way of Mastery, the title of the lesson is Birthing the Mind of Christ. And for anybody who's read this book, you know that's basically what the whole book is about. The book, The Way of Mastery, whether it's The Way of the Heart, The Way of Transformation, or The Way of Knowing, which essentially are the three separate books that make up what is now called The Way of Mastery. Each of these books is geared to helping anybody who reads them and wants to do the exercises, helping anybody birth the mind of Christ, wake up to their own internal connection to the one mind, to a higher wisdom, to their unconscious, to the collective unconscious, to Holy Spirit, to God, to light, to love, to whatever you want to call it. And in the middle of that lesson, there's a story about the shadow of fear. And the point of the book is fear is the opposite of love. And love, this energy of creation, which is actually expressing in, as, through, and around you in each moment. It's just another word for life, the flow of life. So all of the definitions and emotional connections you have for the word love, you can put them aside and just think of life and the flow of events and your existence and everyone you see, that what it's made of, what it, your ability to be aware of it consciously, that's all the energy of love, of creation, of the one mind. I have a friend that I was really good friends with in high school, and I've stayed friends over the years, And he just, a number of years ago, he just went, like he hit a wall where he didn't want to hear anything about the word love because, you know, he'd been raised Catholic and gone to a Catholic high school. And then, as many of us did, after that high school experience, if they went off to college and they went into any kind of a liberal arts college, they started learning, you know, there's a lot more out there than this one religion. And so he did a lot of spiritual reading, and he did a lot of searching, and he did the Course in Miracles, and he did Michael Rice's work, and he did all this stuff. And then a number of years ago, he had another spiritual awakening or crisis, whatever you want to call it. And in his communications to me, if I would say, well, love you and sending love or whatever, he would write back or say, you know, voice to voice on a phone call, I don't even know what that means. Why are you saying that? And so he would have this visceral negative response to the word love. Just like a lot of people have a visceral negative response to the word God. I had somebody in my office yesterday, and I was reading the intro to, I was reading something from Pierre Pradervan's Blessing for Yourself. And this young man said, can we talk about something other than God here? Just, you know, bless yourself, think of yourself as good and loving and you know, your potential for positive, for abundance in your life and for a positive outcome of every interaction. And he zeroed in on the word God and just squirmed on the couch. So if there's anything about the idea of birthing the mind of Christ that strikes you as blasphemy or it strikes you as ridiculous, then substitute a word that's more in line with just the actual flow of life, just your actual experience of being awake, alive, able to interact with other people, and understand that that essence of your life as it's unfolding is life, light, love, etc. And fear is the opposite of it. Fear is a contraction away from. And a lot of people want to get into a big, deep philosophical argument about this. We are not talking about the automatic, visceral, physical survival mechanism that will kick in if you have an insight or an intuition or you're faced with somebody that's violent or a deadly animal. Your body will respond if you're paying attention and awake and aware and take action to try and move you to safety or fight for your survival, and there won't be any emotion involved in it. After the fact, as you review what happened, if you're lucky enough to survive, you can generate all kinds of thoughts, and some of those might be fearful, and you will experience the emotion of fear after the fact. But I can tell you, as someone who's worked in a variety of situations over the years where people were throwing things at my head or taking a swing at me or trying to tackle me, or, you know, whether it was in a juvenile hall or a psychiatric hospital or a therapeutic day school, I can tell you that the safest I've ever been, the most effective and efficient I've ever been, was when I stayed neutral, I stayed awake, I didn't let my mind go into thoughts of, why, how dare that person take a swing at me, or don't they know that I'm the therapist, or what. If my thoughts went to those kinds of thoughts, then I would generate an emotion, I would be out of touch with the moment, there would be a pause, there would be a freezing, there would be, you know, an angry response, and things wouldn't go so well. But if I just stayed calm and neutral and awake and aware, many times in my career, I've moved through situations where everybody stayed safe and nobody got hit and nobody got hurt. So if you start to have a strong negative response, as I talk about Lesson 7 on the Way of Mastery, birthing the mind of Christ, or as I read some of these stories, or I say, you know, fear is like the there's a scriptural passage that says fear is a demon to be cast out. And then you want to argue for how your fear keeps you safe and it's important. Okay, that's one option. I don't want to argue about that. I want to step into an observation about what's the real nature of fear and am I better to be operating in the moment from a belief in fear and how my fear keeps me safe and listening to fear, or am I better operating in that moment from direct observation and neutrality and focusing on the actuality of life, which some would say is love, and choosing love over fear moment to moment, choosing being awake and aware, choosing direct observation over getting stuck in thought. So, Lesson 7 from The Way of Mastery is titled Birthing the Mind of Christ. And it starts with a paragraph that says, forever, forever, I am with you. Forever. For long before the stars were birthed, long before the planets arose, long before even a thought of physicality had emerged within the divine mind of the Son of God, of Son of Creation, we were already created together and equally. Yet that creation of what alone is real knows no point of birth. It always was, it always will be. Therefore, because the Creator is forever, so too have we abided together and been sustained together in this energy of creation that some call love. Throughout all time and even unto eternity do we abide together in the reality, in Michael Rice's words would be, in the actuality of who and what we are. Therefore, think not that it is extraordinary when I say unto you, I am with you always, even unto the end of this age. Let me ask you a question. What journey have you ever taken that's not familiar to me? What journey have I ever taken that is in truth not familiar to you? If we were both created infinitely connected in awareness, sharing the one mind consciousness, everything is connected, as our physicists are telling us. Therefore, think it not extraordinary. For when you look upon me from some deep place of knowingness within yourself, though the words may be different, there's an essence in you that knows within yourself, oh, look, the one mind, the Christ mind, a spark of light of creation, is standing before me as a mirror to who and what I am. When you hold a thought of me in the mind and your body is flooded with emotion, soft, gentle, and light, and you recognize that the Holy Son of all creation was birthed and perfected in your friend, whoever you're looking at, whether it's Yeshua ben Joseph or Susan or Elizabeth or Mary, what is it within you that can know that truth? What part of your mind, what capacity within your heart can look upon someone else and recognize the truth within them? So that you love them, you have compassion for them, you have affection for them, you have a connection with them that is soul deep. For I say well unto you, it is the same part of my mind and that part of my heart that looks upon you always and says, behold, the Holy Child of creation is before me. And I have great love for this one. That which knows, that which comprehends immediately is the mind of Christ. It recognizes itself in each and every one of us. The mind of Christ dwells within you in its fullness right now. Therefore, as I have said unto you many times, never fail to remember that it takes one to know one. If you would look upon Jesus or Yeshua or any of the saints that you revere and say, behold, friend, beloved friend, thank you. Thank you for being who you are and for being holy and for showing the way. If that would happen, then look upon yourself, because in truth you are part of the same connection of the one mind, and say, beloved friend, thank you. Say it to yourself and allow your breath to flow. So later on in that lesson, he talks about how each moment that you've experienced, each moment of unlimitedness, each moment of genuine intimacy, each moment of grace-filled joy that you have ever known, in whatever form it appears to happen, has come because you've allowed your mind to slip into the sea of peace, which means you've released any thoughts of fear or judgment or constriction or contraction. There, you've merely abided, empty, wanting nothing, seeking nothing, being, merely being the presence of what and who you are. When that quality becomes cultivated so that it permeates your consciousness with each breath and with each moment, you will know that Christ has indeed arisen this day in your awareness. And you will celebrate the Easter of your own rebirth in that Christ-minded awareness with each breath. So if that's possible, and if that's your birthright, and if that's always been a possibility, what then could ever possibly arise to obstruct the truth that is true always? Well, let me tell you a story. There is an ancient forest on your planet, a forest that's so high in a rugged mountain valley and so rugged that no one has ever been there. Unknown to the minds of humanity, life goes on in that forest. Deep within the heart of the forest, this morning, a little tiny blade of grass seemed to be tossed by an unseen wind. As it was tossed for just a fragment of a moment, so subtle and soft was this wind, that as the sunlight played against the blade of grass, that blade of grass, it cast the smallest of conceivable shadows on a stone just a little bit away from the blade of grass. No one noticed. The shadow had no effect. It didn't damage the rock. The rock did not even notice. No one on the planet noticed. No one in any of the heavens noticed, except for me. I needed something to build a story around. That tiny shadow, cast by a little blade of grass, momentarily wiggling in a wind in some remote forest, has virtually no effect on the turning of the planets, the creation of new suns, and certainly not one trace of an effect on how deeply the Creator loves you, how deeply the love of creation flows through you in its perfect harmony. That little shadow is what you have given power to. It seems to be able to obstruct the truth within you from being lived. for the moment, you gave that little tiny shadow power. In that very moment, the concept of fear was born. Fear is always a contraction away from love. Fear makes you smaller than the blade of grass and momentarily seems to cast a shadow and therefore obstructs your recognition of the warmth of the sun that bathes you always. So when you resist healing, when you struggle to learn to, quote, speak your truth, close quotes, you may rest assured that something has occurred just prior to that. What is it? It is your decision to believe that the shadow is all-powerful. It's your decision to believe that if you heal, if you grow, if you change, if you let the Christ mind be birthed within you, that that little blade of grass and that little tiny shadow it creates for a very temporary moment will come and punish you and crush you. If you can truly take this story into your being and recognize the utter laughability of such a belief, you will never again fear fear. That's an important line. It doesn't say you will never fear. You'll never have fear. You'll never experience contraction or resistance. It just means you won't fear that process. You'll accept it, acknowledge it, and breathe through it and release it. You will never again allow fear to master you and direct the course of your life. You'll do what that one book that's not such a great book, but I love the title, says, feel the fear and do it anyway. If you can truly take this story into your being and recognize the utter laughability of such a belief, you will learn what it means to trust what it is that is birthed in your heart. If you learn to trust what is birthed in your heart, you will arise and you will go forth without fear. Which means you will go forth with no story at all. What does that mean? It means I will go forth with direct observation instead of belief. I will go forth. I just flashed on something that was revealed in the group last night. Helen Schuckman, who was the scribe for the Course in Miracles, is said to have had a dream, a visioning dream. And in it, she saw herself walking into a cave. And when she walked further into the cave, she found a scroll. And she unrolled the scroll from both ends. And in the middle, there was this large, clear printing of words that said, God is. Right in the middle of the scroll. And as she kept unrolling it from the center towards the outside, on both sides, there were columns of much smaller writing. To the left of that phrase, God is, and to the right of it. And what the words were wasn't discernible because it was so small and, you know, relatively dark in the cave. And Helen had this inner knowing that said, if you read what's on the left, you can learn about the past. If you read what's on the right, you can learn about the future. What's on the left of this scroll, where in the center it says God is, if you read that, you can learn about the past. If you read what's on the right of the words God is, you can learn about the future. And Helen rolled the scroll back up until just the two words God is was visible and said, I just want to learn about this. I don't care about the past. I don't care about the future. I want to be in the present moment. That's what we're talking about here. If I go forward without fear, that means I go forward with no story. That means I'm awake and aware and observing in the moment. I'm not operating from religious belief. I'm not operating from scientific principle or belief in science. I'm just awake and aware in the moment with no story at all. And if you do that, if I do that, we will accomplish whatever creativity, this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in the moment, wants to express through you. And the whole while, you'll be knowing this isn't you doing any of this. You don't know how to keep your heart beating. You don't know how to digest the food you've eaten. But creation is living through you, expressing through you in the moment. And therefore, what forms of the shadow might come across your experience, you will not bow to. You won't listen to fear. You'll see it, you'll feel it, you'll experience it, and you'll see it as false. You'll see it as the opposite of the flow of life, of love, of creation. So you might want to ask yourself, what forms of the shadow of fear have you been allowing to own and run and possess your soul? There are many, many forms. There are peers and parents and siblings that we have to try and please. There are governments to bow down to. There are mates and children that must come first. There are bills to pay. There are desires to check and keep in order. There are activities and statements and behaviors that are done by others that require at least 7 or 8 hours a day for you to analyze and judge. And then you think, oh my gosh, this world is exhausting. Well, but somebody has to do it. The invitation in this book, in this work, is no one has to do that. That mental gymnastics, that judging, that contracting away from things, that expenditure of energy, mental energy, and belief is not necessary. Love, the creative energy, created you. It birthed within you as an individual, at least within this dance of time and space. It birthed within you the power to choose, the power to feel, the power to channel light and love, the power to know that something exists within and as you. That is what love has done. Fear has never created anything like that. So the invitation over and over and over in this work, in the Mind Shifter support groups, in the Way of Mastery, in the Course in Miracles is choose love. Notice fear, recognize it, and refuse to bow to it. So that's my offering for the first 40 minutes of the show. How is that resting, sitting, landing, or not for you? 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. Let me know what your thoughts are. We have about 20 minutes left, and we'd like to be able to spend that time doing something that we are relatively certain will be of benefit to you. So let us know. What's on your mind? How does it strike you to hear some of Lesson 7 from the Way of Mastery and be offered the invitation to refuse to listen to be guided by fear, regardless of your situation. had somebody asking me the other day, what's the of the Alan Cohen books, which one might be good to look at after The Course in Miracles Made Easy? And the course of my personal work over the past few years has brought me to the place where I either read or listen to The Course in Miracles Made Easy once or twice a year, and I also read or listen to The Tao Made Easy, which are two books by Alan Cohen. Gentle, directly stated, reaffirming, reassuring, nurturing, these are words I would use for both of those books. And if you have any interest in finding a good book, these are both available now through Audible, finding a book that you can put on when you're driving or have on when you're doing your exercise routine or have in the background when you're doing housework. Those are two really good suggestions. A Course in Miracles Made Easy by Alan Cohen and The Tao Made Easy by Alan Cohen. And most people that I know that have had exposure to his work find him bright, on target, gentle, and yet rigorous. It's clear that he works at living what these wisdom schools would teach. And I, you know, from this perspective, I like the word wisdom school far more than I like spiritual school, because, as Guy Finley says, there's nothing more practical than true spirituality. And this is when you talk about it as a wisdom school, what we're talking about is, hey, if you practice what's recommended in these teachings, your life will probably be far more enjoyable, creative, loving, etc. And that, to my way of thinking, is worth every bit of energy that I put into it. You know, a lot of times the spiritual teachings say, well, you know, you got to start with this little practice, this little meditation, this little prayer, this little time of fasting, this little time of being alone with your thoughts, this little time of practicing walking into a moment understanding, I don't really know anything about what this moment is, what it is for, what my brother or sister might need in this moment. So I practice asking to be shown. I practice the skill of observation, to be awake and aware in the moment, to catch and release the thoughts that my mind will serve up about the past or the future. And then, you know, the further I go in my spiritual journey, the more I think, boy, I've really done that, and I don't really need to keep doing that. The more I invite myself to be stuck, because whatever started me on this path and was working for me, it probably holds things, hidden gems. It's like, why would I reread Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I mean, if I read it once, I know what's in it, right? Why would I read it again? Why would I read Course in Miracles? Why would I do the lessons of Course in Miracles more than once? You know, one a day for 365 days, that's an entire year. Why would I do it another year? The next year or 5 years later, why would I read The Way of Mastery? I've lost track of how many times I've read that book. And the answer is because I'm a different person. I bring a different consciousness to that book the next time I read it. The essence of the book won't change, and yet what I get from it will probably change dramatically from one reading to the next, because I'm a different person. And I never really tried to keep track of how many times I heard people say, wow, I never saw that in Course in Miracles before. I never saw that in The Way of Mastery before. I never heard that in Dr. Michael Rice's Why Is This Happening to Me Again lecture, or the Healing Through Relationships lecture, or the Codependence to Interdependence lecture. I never understood that before, and all of a sudden, just because of my willingness to repeat the thing and my willingness to make the direct observation as I go to repeat exposure to this book, this video, this life experience, I walk into it with the direct observation. Two fundamental observations. Number one, I don't know everything there is to know. There's a lot about molecular biochemical studies and molecular science, and there's a lot about that I don't know anything about. There's a lot about auto mechanics I don't know anything about. So it's very simple for me to make the observation, hey, I don't know everything. And then it's very simple to make the next observation, which is, so if I don't know everything, a direct observation follows, whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true and perhaps even completely false. So if I walk into a situation with those two observations and I'm willing to expose myself to a book or a lecture or a video or a life experience with those observations active, now there's a chance for me to learn something new. Now there's a chance for me to go deeper. And as Way of Mastery says, deeper into the purity of my own consciousness every time I remove some false perception. Every time I use the process of forgiveness as it was intended as a cleaning up of false perceptions rather than focusing on someone else, blaming them for my upset, and then choosing to let them off the hook. That's not what the forgiveness process is about. The forgiveness process is about understanding that any time I have any form of hostility or fear active in my mind, what it means is there's an error in my thought process. And if I'm willing to step into the correction of that error in the thought process and the dismantling of the negative and therefore false perception that my mind generated because of it, now I can learn something new. Now I get taken further into the purity of my own consciousness. And that's right from the Way of Mastery. Every time I dismantle a false, a negative, a hurtful perception from my mind, I see more about the actuality of life and the truth of my own nature and the connection between me and every living and sentient being. That's why we offer tools to either do the forgiveness process or to understand myself at deeper and deeper levels, to uncover the parts of myself that I may have from moment to moment decided to hide from myself. And every time that one of those things arises, It means I was choosing in that moment, either when I downloaded that belief or in response to that situation, I chose fear. I chose fear over the truth of life. So we've got 7 or 8 minutes left. How is this landing for you? What's on your mind? What thoughts, comments, questions, answers might you share with us in the last part of our show today? 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1 and let us know your thoughts. We're in the process of trying to turn on the microphone for Susan.
Can you hear me? Because I heard it go unmuted.
All right. Welcome, Susan.
Hey. Hi, Dr. Tim. You know, we've gotten to this point where we know what we need to do, and we know that if there's any upset, we know we're in error. We still, I mean, I should say me, but I imagine most of us are, you've carried us along to this point where, for instance, if we get a mind shifter, we're apt to just agree with it because we know the truth, but we're not there necessarily emotionally, but more and more we are distancing ourselves, or I am, from whatever upset shows up. I feel as if I'm walking beside myself, the self that used to get totally swallowed up in fear or embroiled in some critical feeling towards someone. But now I feel as if I've become two people almost, and the person I choose to be is the person who's walking aware beside and aware of the other person, but not investing any energy there anymore. So in a way, when you're reading these things, and I know I've called into the radio show a lot, but I feel as if I'm not in that place. Maybe I'm fooling myself. Maybe another layer will happen and I'll call you and say, I need a worksheet. I need help. But I can just, I'm sitting here nodding to myself and agreeing and knowing this is right, and also aware that the rest of me is lagging behind, or parts of me are lagging behind, but I'm not so concerned with them anymore. So,
well,
does
I would
that make
encourage
any sense?
You to, I would encourage you to enjoy that.
Okay.
Now, the caution is what you said. If you're busy enjoying that, that's fine, because if that's what's happening, that's life. That's what's the actuality of your life in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What I've learned, this is a lot of years ago now, was if I'm busy enjoying that and my mind serves up any kind of a thought that says, oh, good, you're done with this or that, rather
right.
than believe that baloney, I can take
mm-hmm.
that thought itself as a wake-up call.
Yeah,
let's say,
exactly. That's true.
Let's say I have the thought that says, oh, thank goodness you're done with your anger at your ex-wife.
Yeah.
It's so
right.
nice to not have any anger at her anymore. As
right.
soon as I have that thought, from my current state of knowledge and awareness, I either make a list of worksheets I could do about my ex-wife, or I write a note to myself, sit with this, do a mind shifter on her, because that is a lie. That is my fear-based mind that wants to be done, that wants to hide from me something that in that moment is literally bubbling up, getting closer
mm-hmm.
to conscious awareness. And I don't have to wait until I'm triggered to actual rage or upset. or that I've been blinded by that process, and everybody around sees that I'm angry at her and that I'm off base and I'm making a fool of myself because I think I'm right and she's wrong. I don't have to wait for that. If I have the thought, oh, thank goodness I'm done with this, I can start to do the worksheet on it. So there's the distinction between enjoying it if you're in a space where you listen to one of your teachers and they say something and it just seems right to you, and you feel it in your energy system, then enjoy that. And at the same time, as I said earlier when I started reading, I said, if you have any negative response to the word God or the thought about birthing the mind of Christ or about anything that's coming up, pay attention, because that's an alarm within you about the presence of a false belief or traumatic energy in you that you could dismantle.
Right. That's true. That's good. Oh, and there's plenty. That's plenty. But when it bubbles up, I've just been experiencing this. I'm not going to own that. Yes, it's there. I know it's an error. I'm stepping away from that. I'm choosing. Michael said something really cool yesterday. Here he is, probably sick with COVID, but and tired, on our Zoom follow-up from the Still Point. Jeannie is ashenly pale, having been 2 days very sick, sitting at the console and doing her thing, putting in, you know, answering texts and things. It's amazing what they were doing. But Michael at one point said something to the effect of, I'm still that old person that has this or that reaction. I'm rewording. I wish, I mean, the video does exist, and I might be able to find how he put it. Basically, he just said, this is my choice. I'm going to step over here. I'm going to install Rachma. I just install Rachma over and over and over, if necessary, over and over again, because that's where I choose to be. What he was basically saying is the battle is still on. There's still discomfort. I'm not there, but part of me really is there. And I'm becoming more an observer of the dark part or the whatever, the unrealized, the unenlightened part. But I'm stepping over into this, putting on the filter and acting out of that. He wasn't going high and mighty and saying, I'm there. He would never do that. He's still doing his work more than ever, he says. And I can feel after so many shows and so many worksheets that I know what he's talking about. There's nothing romantic or even wonderful about it. It's just kind of mechanical even. So, and maybe that's troublesome. I don't know, but it's just, I feel in a different place, and I bet a lot of us are.
Okay. I wouldn't change a thing.
What are you going to say to that?
I'm just say, okay. Yeah. Good. Well, I thank you for chiming in here at the end. I will mute you so we can make the transition. And great to hear from you as always. Blessings. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. How are you today?
Thank you, Dr. Kim. I appreciate you. Thanks for playing that for us yesterday.
How are you?
Doing better. My temperature's back down kind of close to normal, and I'm still hoarse, and my chest is still tight, but a lot of the other symptoms have gone away. The headache's gone, and I'm keeping my oxygen level up. Michael got me some balloons, so if it starts dropping low, I just start blowing balloons. I said I've had more medication in my body in the last 2 days than I've had in probably my lifetime, but in this case it has served a purpose. So after I had the monoclonal antibiotic treatment yesterday, that's why we had you play in the show, and I started feeling better shortly thereafter, but was still worn out. And Susan, thank you. She actually could see me fading, I think, in the Zoom class last night. And she said, why don't you lay down on that couch that's behind you? And I lay down and covered up and was gone in about 1 minute. So thank you for encouraging me to do that.
Getting lots of deep rest.
Yeah. Oh, Michael, just heard you pop in.
You did. And welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here with us to continue this conversation as we move forward looking into this whole idea of first century Aramaic forgiveness. As Jean says, we're facing some challenges with COVID, and fortunately we're both doing pretty well. A challenging day or two, but all things moving forward and rock and roll. Jeannie has been more impacted by it so far, fortunately, than I have. And unfortunately, she's popping back and doing pretty well, and I'm hanging right with her there. So glad that you're here. And we're into chapter 24, just about to the end of the year, December the 15th already. And we've been walking through a worksheet with our character Richard, who's decided he's going to face some things around his relationship with his sister Amy. And the last thing he shared with us in our last reading was that he wants to yell and get rid of Amy, trying to get rid of his sister because she's so much had it so much better than he has. And moving to step two, which is a reminder that punishment and blame are not friends. They're a ball and chain. They may bring relief in the short term, but the consequences are always destructive to your physiology, the way your mind works, and your happiness. Can Lillinger really hurt you that much? Richard was definitely not convinced. Well, I'm not sure how to tell the effects of, quote-unquote, a little anger, but I suspect if we were to quantify it, we would find that anger is one of the major destructive forces to the human body. We are so good at suppressing it, we don't usually have the opportunity to directly confront the effects of our feelings until it's too late. You know, oftentimes our anger will express in the judgments we make about others and pretend that our judgments are about others when we fail to realize that our judgments are about the constructs in our minds and rarely involve others. And so when we decide that someone is deserving of our deep punishment, we're quite likely reflecting into our perceptual constructs that anger that's been hidden. So we don't usually get the opportunity to directly confront the effects of that until it's too late. We're facing major degenerative conditions. And this is always a challenge when I talk to somebody who's ready to do some work and then they decide, well, you know, things aren't that bad. I'll just let it go. And sadly, people become very motivated when they're at the bottom of their game. I remember working with one gentleman, this was fairly recently, and he'd been involved in the work for 30 plus years, but never really taken it on. And he's facing some deep degenerative diseases, and all of a sudden he's more ready to listen and more ready to go than he ever was. But it's like, you know, after so many years of committing literal energetic offenses against your own physiology, you made it, yes, I hear your willingness now, but you made it so much more difficult by ignoring it when it would have been relatively simple to break through and get finished with those effects. So let's look at step two, where you acknowledge that, too, punishment and blame are not my friends. I now choose to be responsible. Remember, the mind always believes it's right. In step three, it's time to put aside being right and acknowledge that even if you are right, the way you are feeling is self-destructive. And it's time to let those feelings go. Verbal release is a powerful way to initiate the moving out of old energies. Oh, wait a minute, Michael. This sounds like I have to give in to people, even when I know they're wrong. Being a doormat doesn't sound any more appealing than having destructive energies rolling around inside of me. Well, remember, Richard, this is about healing the destructive energies we carry and holding others accountable for their behaviors through forgiveness. We'll be able to hold others to account and ourselves as well from a clear functional mind and a loving space that supports relationship rather than creating separation. So most people, when they keep their hostility and fear hidden, they'll create all sorts of reasons for separation. They'll tell all kinds of stories. They'll have all kinds of blame games to play. And then when they create separation, they'll make excuses. Well, you know, I'm only separating from you because of what you did. Well, excuse me, I think you're separating because of what you've got going on. Otherwise, we'd be right here continuing our conversation. But denial's a powerful way to hide from ourselves, and the whole invitation of this worksheet process is to come out of denial. And remember that denial, our definition of denial in this work is that when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I'm in a state of denial. And when I'm in that state of denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you hurt me, you upset me, you disturbed me, that really caused me a lot of pain. Then by so doing, I have to hide something from myself, the real cause of my pain. And I replace that with an hallucination. And the easiest way to define an hallucination is any perceptual construct based in hostility or fear. If hostility or fear is moving in you, you're living in a construct that is an hallucination. And what we want to do with forgiveness is collapse the hallucinations, to actually move into living in the actual world rather than hang out in the past, hang out in those perceptual constructs that are out of alignment. So do step three. I'm going to move on to that. They reference your answers from step one. Check off the boxes, and at the same time, think the release thought or speak it out loud if practical. So step three, I want to feel better. I let go of, one, my feelings, number 1B. I let go of the thought, whatever that is, in number 1C. I let go of my need to punish, 1D. And I let go of my need to be right. And there's the place where breathing becomes important. Well, why would I want to release those thoughts, Richard? Kind of, you know, comes forward with, well, you know, I'm justified with those things. So he's like, well, why would I want to let go of those? If you inflict pain on yourself with a thought, you let go of it so you can heal. If there's rage or fear in you as a result of that thought, it is your work to heal the rage and fear. Remember, you get the original. She, in this case, your sister, gets the carbon copy. Many of us have been taught that we need to be angry to get what we want. In truth, getting what you want is easier to create from a space of peace and clarity than from a space of anger. You also get to release the stress of the anger held in your body and achieve higher states of health and aliveness in the process. Health is not the condition of being free of symptoms. In this work, we define health as a state of conscious, active, present love. An absence of that state is dis-ease and the beginning of all organic degeneration. Other benefits of letting go of disturbing thoughts are that you'll have peace of mind, and your mind will no longer need to create scenarios that justify your being angry. He seems satisfied that these ideas made sense and relaxed more with each step of the worksheet. The resistance that had shown up from time and time again earlier in the day vanished, and he completed the verbal release process. I think that was a relief for both of us. Working with someone who is willing is certainly a whole lot easier than those who are in a state of unwillingness. And so we'll keep moving forward with this process of forgiveness, this step-by-step how-to, as the next 2 weeks unfold and we complete. And if along the way any questions are aroused about the forgiveness process, then we invite you to push one and ask your question. Jeannie, did you get to speak about the latest feature that you put into the online app the other day? Even though you
were in your symptomatic state? It was already in the app as a button that says more, but when you click on that, it'll immediately take you to a web page on their website, and I added at the very top of it the Wellness Through Stillness MP3. So that's the first link that's in there under the More button. So you can, if you open the app and click it, and I haven't checked Apple in 2 days, actually. I actually worked with India yesterday morning from bed. But I did work with India yesterday morning even from the bed. And they're both have been submitted to Apple and to Google. So I haven't checked to see if they've approved them and it's updated yet, but you can keep checking and update your app, and you'll have all those new features. And from any page within the app, doesn't matter if you're doing a worksheet or if you're playing the game or if you're in the commitments, or it doesn't matter where you're at. Anywhere in the app, you can click a button and send a question.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the enhanced workability and what's there and available from the app. And the CD, Wellness to Stillness, something you can go to our catalog and order. It's $10, or you can order the download of it. But now you don't need to. There's a free link in the app. So there's a 20-minute progressive relaxation. And over the last, that's something I created 40-plus years ago. It's interesting to listen to my voice back then. But you can click on that, and people over the years who told me that's their healthcare plan that they and their mechanism for sleep, that they listen to it literally every night. So it's there and available free inside of the app. If you just click the More button, the first link is to Wellness to Stillness. So another little gift that we get to put into the app, and hopefully it serves you more and more each time that you access it. And if you don't have the app, you can go to our website, or pardon me, actually go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And if you type that in, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can do the worksheet process that we're walking Richard through right now. It's a different version of the worksheet than the one that's printed in the book from 25-plus years ago. We've learned a few things since then. But there are a couple of different versions of that worksheet within the app that you can do. There's children's game, the Dragon Klingon game. There are several variations on the theme of My Commitment that you can access now right from the app. There's a button there, as Jeannie said. You can just click and ask questions. It'll send it directly to us. We'll answer the question on the show, and we'll send back an email that tells you that when we answered that question. And if you choose to access the radio show through the app, you can do that as well. And I mean, just all kinds of new functionality. So I'm pretty excited about that. And beyond that, Miss Jeannie, it's now 1:13. And so I wonder if we've got anybody out there with a thought, hand up in the phone queue, or anything happening in the chat room.
It is all quiet. Nobody has a hand up and no questions in the chat room. And so press 1. You're first in line. Okay, a hand just went up, and I believe it's Miss Susan.
Awesome.
610, you're on the air.
Hey. Hi.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thanks again.
Oh, listen, I was just, I was thinking, oh, we better have a short meeting tonight. I felt like taking over and saying, all right, everybody shut up and let's get off.
Well, I'm glad you jumped in and encouraged her to rest.
She did. She sent me a private message on the Zoom and said, why don't you lay down on that couch that's behind you? And I no more than had done that and covered up and I was gone.
I know. I was so happy. We were all, I'm sure, very happy to see you do that. That was, that's one of the great things about Zoom. Like, what are you doing, Michael? You've got your hand in the Avicen, I bet.
I do.
He does.
No?
Right now.
I absolutely do, yes. And I thank God for it.
Right. And I've got my head on a heating pad because I'm trying to untangle some sore neck muscles, which are improving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do all that stuff. But anyway, I had a question generated from last night. Magda was talking about TV, and she was also talking about sugar.
Right.
I still have a craving for sugar, and I know that means some work needs to be done. I've been off sugar in solidarity with my grandson for, 2 months now. And I really have to stay sober because if I slip, I invite him to slip. And but my question is, I've gotten these, I'm getting slippery. I have stevia and I have monk fruit, a combination of erythritol or something and monk fruit. And it says it's keto. It won't up your insulin, whatever they're doing.
Right.
Am I cheating is the question.
Well,
don't say yes.
No, I guess it would depend on what your agreement was. If, sugar has such the refined sucrose molecule is clearly a drug, though it is, when it's properly combined with nutrients, what feeds the cell and keeps the cell operating. Now, if your agreement with him was, I'm coming off of sweeteners, well, then you need to get rid of the rest of it too. But if you're talking about you're coming off of an addiction, your invitation to him was to come out of some addictive behaviors, and you're doing the same. I've never heard of anybody becoming addicted to the alternative sweeteners as such. So I wouldn't call it cheating that you're, again, depends on your agreement with him, but if it's, I'm going to stop using sugar as opposed to stop using sweeteners altogether, then, you'd have to make the decision on that one.
No, I said sugar, and I meant, like these, for instance, early on, he saw that I was eating these, they're like the equivalent of Kind bars. They have 5 or 6 grams of sugar in them. I eat one for breakfast if I'm getting out of the house really early. He said, are you eating those? And I said, yeah. And he said, they have sugar in them. You can't eat those. You made a deal with me. And I said, okay.
Good
and
for
I
him.
And I stopped eating those. So, he said, if I'm going to stay sober, you have to. That's when he was living here. And I haven't gone back on those. But I love the taste, like I plain yogurt. But I put stevia in because plain yogurt, just plain is yuck. And so anyway, I guess I can just keep my deal. No sugar, no candy bars, no cakes, no candy, no, cookies and all that stuff. But there is sugar in fruit. I mean, a prune, for goodness sake, has a ton of sugar in it. So I've been wondering if I'm cheating all along, but I guess not.
But there's a difference. There's a difference.
Yeah.
The refined product sugar is a totally different thing than the sugar that you find in a plum that has calcium and magnesium and different nutrients attached to it. And the reason the sugar is so destructive is because if you take it in its pure form, kind of like if you put gasoline in its pure form into a carburetor, if there's no air mixed with it, it'll destroy the engine. The engine won't run. And the same way, sugar on its own will tend to destroy this engine, where when you put that plum in your mouth and you chew it, then the body has to take out the calcium and the body has to separate out the magnesium and the body has to do this and this and this to make the end result, which is sucrose, available for the cell to operate from. But it's a totally different substance in that regard.
That's helpful.
I think one of the tragedies of history.
Sorry, Michael, say that last clause again.
I was just going to say that I think one of the tragedies of history is that they found out how to refine the sugar molecule. I understand that people, for instance, who work on sugarcane plantations and they go around chewing on sugarcane all the time have some of the best teeth in the world. And they're chewing on sugarcane. Well, how does that work? There are all kinds of, I mean, sugarcane has deep roots, all kinds of minerals, all kinds of nutrients in the sugarcane. Mm-hmm. And if you're chewing on sugarcane, that's a whole different thing than that refined molecule that, you know, is so destructive to the body because it throws the pancreas off. It creates spikes in sugar, and that creates a stress on organs. It just destroys everything.
Okay. Well, you said something really, really good right at the beginning. You said you lay down the parameters. You know, are you giving up sweeteners too? No. I can just say I'm giving up sugar as I understand it to be pure sugar refined. Anything with refined sugar in it is off the table. But everything else is okay. I can do that. Yeah.
You'll benefit greatly by that.
It has been a challenge at times.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
You'll benefit greatly by that agreement. That's going to support you immeasurably.
Yeah, I already have. Another thing you said on the Zoom. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You said something last night. I may have to scroll through the video to find it. You may not even remember.
Uh-huh.
But you said something about how no matter how you may feel about somebody or something somebody's done or an event, you step away from that, you install Rachma, you put the filter on or whatever. I guess what I really appreciated is that you affirm that it isn't as if we're all in the clear. When we get it, then we're cured of ever having a feeling of dissatisfaction or upset, but we can just put the filter on immediately, step into a space of love without feeling love the way we think about it. You've probably said that 20 times or 50 times, just went through last night, and it was very helpful because I go through my day and I'll get triggered, a mild trigger about this or that or the other, and I can just say, whoop, we're at Rachma, come on in.
Take a breath.
Let's reestablish. And that was just like the most liberating thought.
Well, that's good. And, you know, when you recognize that stored within us, this biocomputer, this body-mind unit, literally holds every thought, every feeling, every reality from every generation in our bloodline, there are all kinds of thought disorders in there. And if they're there, they're going to set up fields. It's going to pull somebody in to bounce off of them. And that will trigger those things into activity. If I stand on guard when those things are triggered into activity, rather than, oh, my God, I've been triggered, it's like, oh, here's another piece that I can throw out, another piece of healing to do. Then it just becomes a part of making progress through that multi-generational database. And when you realize just how huge it is and how tricky it is.
It is tricky.
Yeah.
But this is so liberating. It's like saying, I am no longer a slave to any of that. I take my stand on the other side of this fence. I might walk very close to it, but I'm on the other side, and that's it. And I hope that'll hold when I'm really, really triggered. Knock on wood, it's only been a day. So far, so good. But it's just great to have you say that. You were really sharp last night. Here you were, probably fighting your COVID fatigue and everything yourself, running around the house, taking care of Dad and everything else in the house. And then you come on. We expected a cancellation last night. Tim kept saying, have you gotten an email? I said, here it is. It came in.
No, we're rock and roll. I'm fortunate. I have been doing fairly well. As I said when we started the show, I've been feeling, you know, a little on the south side of funky, but that's been the most of it, quite fortunately. And so
Excellent.
Moving through those old layers. And, you know, to me, another key piece that ties in with what you're saying impacted you last night is identification. When I identify with, you know, as opposed to I have this trashy old thought, or identifying with, or I am this trashy old thought, it's a difference of night and day that you can recognize it's a possession
that's
you have
exactly
and you can throw it out.
That's exactly it, identifying. There it is. That's that's a great word. Okay.
And one of the early worksheets, there was a step in it that said, I release identification with this non-being self, or words to that effect.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. One of the earlier worksheets, that was a piece in the process. So identification with the false self is a major thing to give up. And, you know, it's that self, again, we come back to it over and over, that Yeshua says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. That we've got to die to that false self, that hostility and fear-based self that can create all kinds of crazy fantasies that we can get identified with or get sucked into. And to break identification with those things is a major piece of work.
It's a decision, though. That's the cool thing, is we have some control over that.
Yes, it is a choice. The decision will always take you back to the old way. But it is where you can activate choice and you can select something different. Where the mind, if it's got something in there, it's going to serve it up and say, ah, see, this is who you are. It's like, no, thank you, I'll pass.
Oh, that's so good.
I realize it's there, but it ain't me.
That's so good. That is so good. Hey, listen, I have to get off. I've got a meeting at 1:30, but I wanted to come in as long as I could. So sorry I'm going to miss the rest. And hello, everybody who's on the thing. And great to know that this is going on.
All right. Well, love and blessings. And appreciate you, young lady.
Thanks.
Okay,
I've sent the link to the Zoom meeting last night, so you should have that in your email.
Excellent. Thank you. Boy, you're so all right. Honest. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks. Lots of love, you guys. Okay.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care.
Bye. Yeah, bye.
By the way, what we're talking about that happened last night is the second session that we have each month around our Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club. So the second Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, we have a group that's getting together to do Still Point Breathing. And so that's the second Saturday of each month. And then the following Tuesday, after we have that Saturday session, we have a 7 until completion point, usually ends up sometime between 8:30 and 9. We have a second session in that club. So if you're interested in joining us, you can jump on the website, or through the app you can look at events and you'll see the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club, which you can join. There are a variety of levels to play in that arena. You can do one session, and or you can do a package of three sessions, or you can do sign up for a whole year. And, of course, the price gets better and better with each level. A single session, a Saturday session and Tuesday, is $150 if you decide to do it once. We do full Still Point Breathing session with everyone that's part of the group. And then on Tuesday, we do some, you know, iron out the wrinkles, do some question and answers. So that's a single session, and the cost for a single session is $150. Or you can do a package of three, and a package of three of those, any 3 months that you want to, it's $125 per month. And or you can do a year, and a year's registration is $100 a month, so it's $1,200 instead of $1,800. And if you choose to pay that $1,200 in advance, it's reduced to $900. So if you want to support us and you want to be part of things on an ongoing basis using the breath, that's one of the most important tools that we use. And I've been having worked with people on a personal level for decades with the breath, I am just so delighted that we're getting as powerful a result in over Zoom as we do when we do it in person. So that's pretty sweet. The session also includes two videos. One are Mind Shifters and Introduction to Still Point Breathing is included. That's an item from our catalog. It's normally a $20 streaming download. It includes a Mind Shifters session from one of our intensives. And we did a radio show on why Mind Shifters. So all of three of those things are included as permanent streaming sessions that you have, whether you do one or three or the whole year. And then, of course, participation follows from there. So if you want to join us for that, drop Jeannie a note, J-E-A-N-I-E at W-H-Y-again.org. Or you can drop her a note through the app and say, here's my name and phone number. I want to play. And we'll get back in touch with you and get you set up to participate. So, and we've got a really sweet group of people that's forming. It's building each month, and people who are really dedicated to doing the work. So the space is pretty powerful. We've been getting some really profound openings for folks using that still point breathing process. And so we're about halfway through our hour, and if you're out there in listener land, our call-in number, if you're on a station where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show. And then if you have a question or a thought, if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will see you and introduce you by your area code, and we will be having a conversation. We'd love to have a conversation with you. Time for dialogue. We want to interact. We want to hear from you. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What refinements as we're going through this worksheet process? You know, if you've been doing the worksheet, or if you haven't, is this what we're going through with Richard? Is it awakening any questions for you? Any refinements that are needed in using the tool? That's what we're here to offer. So if you're out there in listener land, push 1. Let's have a conversation. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anything happening out there in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
Well, Kathy's with us in the chat room, and she said that she had surgery on her gums and her palate. So we hope that you are doing well in recovery. Are you
holding
back
the space,
in
Kathy,
Florida
you've been
or
a lot
still
there.
In Colombia? Yeah. She said they wanted to make sure if the root had a fissure, and so it got pulled out.
Ouch.
And that's why she had the abscess. Are you back in Florida?
Holding the space.
Giving her a moment to type.
Right.
Yes, she's back in Florida. Well, we hold the space that your mouth heals very well and that that's the end of your trouble with your teeth.
For sure. That's big stuff. So if you're out there in listener land, if you push 1, we're having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Time for dialogue. What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Push 1. Let's have a conversation. And my highest thought, Jeannie, is with the need for rest, is that if we really don't have anyone who has any other questions or thoughts or conversation to have, if the dialogue is not going to continue, then I think we should close the show out and get you back to resting.
All right.
What do you think? One more call. One last call. I'd rather continue with conversation, but if nobody has any specific questions, then maybe we'll just let it go for the day. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you and hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift you can give. It's a gift the world needs. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.